Hi, this is Pete Worrell, and I'm recording this special section of the energy creation part of our Positive Enterprise Value blog with you because I had the fun of meeting with and talking with David Caro. David is the MD, PhD, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Human Longevity, Inc., HLI, in La Jolla, California. It turns out that while I was interviewing Todd McAllister of Fountain Therapeutics for our Positive Enterprise Value podcast, David stopped by to say hello. And as we were having such an enjoyable and interesting conversation, I thought, wow, other entrepreneur owner managers might want to hear this. And so I asked David's permission and pushed the record button. And what you have here is a very great recording of just a very casual, wide-ranging conversation where you'll hear David's points of view on health span and on health care as opposed to longevity and sick care. You'll hear a little bit about his own morning routines, his own theories and thoughts on working out, on using supplements and not using supplements, on what he's thinking about for the future of HLI. And I just thought it was a terrific off-the-cuff kind of recording to be a real energy creator for all of us, and I hope you enjoy it.
In that space, right?
Yeah.
So even if I've got a totally stressful day,
yeah,
and I can check in, check out, and you know, do that actually twice a day usually in the
morning. So tell me about, I'm really interested in that because I too am a sort of a 6 or 7 day a week workout guy, but I also I use breath work with it, some hot and cold. I also am a 30 year transcendental meditation guy, and so that's pretty much works in every day. And you say 2 times a day, tell me about that.
So, you know, my whole sort of program is kind of oriented around sleep, because I think that the most important
thing... So my comment about Matthew Walker resonated with you.
I briefly heard it.
Yeah.
All I heard was sleep, and it was like...
Have you heard, have you read this book by Matthew Walker called Why We Sleep?
No.
Oh, I strongly, strongly recommend it to you.
Yeah,
and also he is on podcasts from everyone from Tim Ferriss to Peter Attia to Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
And just... the stuff he says is so insightful, and yet you probably already feel it in your heart.
Well, I probably feel it, and I probably know some of the science behind it. I mean, look, the increase in dementia and mild cognitive impairment, I think, is correlated absolutely with sleep deficit. You know, and you know, sleeping is when our brain, you know, clears plaque. It's when our brain heals. So we've got to go, first of all, we need 8 hours of sleep. Folks who get less than that, you know, 7 maybe is okay, but 6 or 5, you're doing a disservice to yourself. So you need sleep. And second of all, it can't be under, you know, drug-induced, right?
Right.
And alcohol is the worst offender.
Right.
When we drink even one glass of wine,
right,
we are not sleeping well. We're not in deep REM sleep. We're
right,
not healing. We're not clearing our plaque. And so no wonder, you know, we've got so many folks that are accumulating plaque in their brains, they're not sleeping well, they're getting mild cognitive impairment in their 50s.
Yes.
So my whole program is oriented around, I want to be able to hit the pillow and lights out, you know. And so part of my workout routine is getting to a point where at night, you know, I'm hitting the pillow, I'm ready for sleep, and boom, I'm out.
So are
8 hours peaceful, restful.
So I'm totally with you. When I have no reason to, urgency to go to sleep or to wake up, I find that I usually am in bed for a little over 8 hours.
Yeah.
And I usually, though, get about 7.5 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
What's your regimen? Do you have a particular, are you an early to bed, early to rise guy? How does that work?
I usually 10 to 6, like Todd in your discussion and like you,
you
know, travel a fair amount. I just got back from Hong Kong and Beijing.
Yeah.
So I'm still a little jet lagged, you know, but so it's never perfect, right?
Yeah, right.
That's the ideal.
So Matthew Walker, it sounds like you actually could have written the book. You're right on it, but you'd enjoy his podcast interviews with these people, if nothing else.
Yeah.
He says that for the first time, he has research, a 9,000-person study, that he actually doesn't say that Alzheimer's is correlated with lack of sleep or quality of sleep. He says it's definite cause and effect.
Yeah.
That he, and he uses both markers, length of sleep, but also he uses quality of sleep, which is the inverse of interrupted sleep.
Yeah.
And he also would put the number one culprit as alcohol,
Yeah.
where you're actually using an anesthetic.
Yeah.
which is inhibiting your quality sleep.
And it's all the same thing. It's Benadryl, it's Ambien, it's, you know, you name it. All of those things are getting in the way of you getting, you know, deep sleep, appropriate sleep. Yeah. I got to read this book.
You do. Why We Sleep.
Yeah.
Really good. So you
asked me about my, you know, kind of exercise.
Exactly. Yeah.
But in a way that, you know, that is all about me getting good sleep, you know, in addition to all the other benefits, right?
And so for you, it starts there.
It starts there, you know, and, you know, I hear so many of my colleagues, and I'm this way too. I'm always on, right?
Yeah.
You're always on.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like if I exercise and I hit the pillow, I can turn off.
Yeah.
I can turn off. That's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
And if I don't do, if I'm not in my program, you know, if I'm jet lagged and haven't worked out, ate like crap, you know, it's hard, you know, to kind of slow things down.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that for me, identify with what you're saying even this morning. So I'm just here for a short trip, so I haven't bothered to try to get on Pacific time.
Yeah.
And so at 5 this morning, I was at the La Jolla Sports Club.
Yeah.
And you know, opening them up and getting a workout in. And I actually don't know how I'm going to use the term business owners, because those are the guys I'm most familiar with, or CEOs like you, how we operate at our high level of performance sustainably. So I'm 62.
Yeah.
I don't know how I could do that without doing that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So sleep as a foundation is good, but for me it also involves, candidly, definitely working out, exercise, sweating, and some variability in that.
Yeah.
And even for me, it involves getting not being on by being off in the form of TM.
Yeah.
Do you do something like that?
Well, you know, I would just say that my own routine, it's, you know, it's biking, it's running, it's swimming, it's yoga. And so I have kind of what I would call sort of jarring, you know, exercise.
Yes.
And for me, that's running, you know, it's like, and I do that in the morning. I don't drink coffee. I very rarely drink alcohol. I don't do pills. I don't do supplements. Nothing.
No Tylenol PM?
Nothing. Zero. Ever. No aspirin, no statins.
Ooh,
no vitamins.
No aspirin, no ibuprofen.
I don't believe in any of it. I think largely we've given up our power to the pharmaceutical industry and to physicians, and that they've got us believing that, you know, you're over 60, you need a statin for cholesterol, you need a water pill for blood pressure, you need a melatonin for sleep, and I think it's all garbage. You know, I go running in the morning and I see right there on Black's Beach over the Pacific Ocean, I see these beautiful little bunny rabbits jumping around, and I'm like, they're happy as can be.
Right.
They weren't drinking the night before.
Right.
They weren't taking pills the night before, and they're doing great. We don't need it either.
Yeah.
You know,
I love it. You had
you know, 3,000 or 4,000 years of ancestors who got you to the point that you're at right now, and they were doing great with all that garbage too.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't need all that stuff.
Yeah.
We really don't. It's a program, not a pill. And I believe largely, you know, and that's what we try and do in the Health Nucleus, is give our clients a sort of program of action, data-driven. And I think largely for most of us, you know, I think most chronic age-related disease, it's on a bell curve. There's only very few of us that are in the tail of that bell curve that have extreme phenotype. Take blood pressure. How many of us have super high blood pressure or super low blood pressure? Very small number.
Right.
Those people may need to be on a pill.
Right.
Right? If you got super high blood pressure, no getting around it. The rest of us, we can modify it through lifestyle. And that's what we should be doing.
I love hearing you say that, man, particularly in your role as a physician and as a scientist.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we're in a minority.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not the culture we live in, right? The popular culture we live in is kind of the opposite.
Yeah. It's you got to have a pill for everything.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, I get into an argument with our cardiologist here all the time because he wants to put folks on statin,
right,
you know, as soon as they have high cholesterol. I'm like, no. That person needs to get their butt out of bed in the morning and go for a run and maybe at night do some yoga. I guarantee you, give me a month with that person doing that, they won't need a statin.
Right. Do you know the work of Wim Hof at all, the hot and cold?
No.
Okay. So this is a madman who some of the people who listen to this podcast will know about. He is from the Netherlands, and they call him the Iceman. I think he's got the world record for swimming under ice.
Yeah.
But he is all about using cold therapy.
Yeah.
And sometimes hot therapy just to enhance our physical workouts.
I love cold therapy.
Do you use ice at all?
No, I don't do that. But I mean, in La Jolla, there's actually a number of outdoor pools.
Yes.
And everyone thinks about, you know, sunny Southern California, but actually the nighttime here, it's a desert, right?
Yes.
So it gets pretty cold at night. So I'll often do like a 9 p.m. swim at the YMCA. And that pool water is cold.
Yes. You know?
and I'm jumping in, and it's like, whoa, you know. But that's just awesome, and you get a little vasoconstriction,
yeah.
And it's like, it's yeah. You know. So I don't do ice baths or anything like that, but that's sort of my equivalent of. You know.
I've done the ice baths. I don't have the attention span to go grab all of that ice and put it in a bucket for myself or for my wife. I have done it when I've gone with groups of people to try it out. But what I do is the same as you. I did install a small barrel sauna at home.
Yeah.
And I do use that. It's not an infrared, just a regular Finnish as made in Finland sauna. And then I also have a pool, which because I live 50 miles north of Boston, this time of year, the pool might be 70.
Yeah.
And I can actually feel, David, it changes my state.
Yeah, absolutely.
So maybe it's the endorphins that are going through my system. Yeah. I worked out, I went in the sauna, now I'm in the pool.
Yeah.
But it's something. And so if I do it at night, it's almost like a sedative.
Yeah. Well, that's to my point, you know, so I mentioned sort of jarring exercise and
yes.
kind of more sort of hypnotic or, you know, kind of more soothing, you know, or meditative, you know. So what I try and do is in the morning, I do my jarring exercise. It kind of like, you know, it's my coffee, right? I don't drink caffeine. So it kind of gets me going in the morning. And then in the evening, maybe some meditative swimming, meditative yoga, just something that's, I don't want to do something jarring in the evening. So, you know, 2 hours of physical activity every day. That's actually not a lot. Think about our ancestors 3,000 years ago. They were like, you know, whatever they were doing, it was like 8 hours of physical activity basically every single day. Right. And we're, you know, and it's getting worse for us. Right. Because now we've got Postmates and Uber Eats and Uber. Right. And, you know, you get everything delivered to you, including your food. You don't have to leave the house anymore.
Now, look, it's a theory out of the blue. It's only my theory. But, you know, I think we were Homo sapiens. People stand upright like us with big heads and swing our arms. We've been around for 200,000 years, plus or minus. And 190,000 of those years, we were hunter-gatherers, right?
Yeah.
So, for 10,000 years, we were agrarian. Yeah. But it's only been since the Industrial Revolution in 150 years.
Yeah.
And I might even argue to you 50 of those last years that we've had this sedentary lifestyle with the stuff that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So it's really crazy that we're living this way and thinking that it's normal.
Yeah, it's just totally not normal.
Yeah.
It's not good for us. So I say, you know, when I say 2 hours exercise, people go, oh my God, that's so extreme. No, you know, it's not like, I'm not asking you to do 2 hours with your heart rate in the 120s.
Yeah.
I'm saying, you know, some of that should be meditative, some of it should be jarring, but you gotta be doing something.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
So, yesterday I was a client of the Health Nucleus, and some of the podcast listeners will have heard me describe some of that work that in my podcast interview with Tom McAllister.
Yeah.
Help me understand a little bit more about what Human Longevity Inc., HLI, is doing outside of the Health Nucleus.
Yeah. Well, let me just start by saying, you know, here's our mission, right? So our mission is to use deep health insights, including artificial intelligence, to extend the healthy human lifespan. So my goal for you as our patient and client is that you live to 128 and you die not of disease, but doing something you love. And that's a radical paradigm shift, that we should die doing something we love, but not of disease. And you know what? It's totally possible. It's in our hands to make that happen today.
But right now we're in a different place though, aren't we? Because it seems to me, I guess, a layperson, that we've achieved a increased longevity, but we haven't increased our health span.
Yeah, that's right.
And so my parents in the past couple of years both died at age 92,
yeah.
and they did die of disease, of course. Yeah. They had great lives and full lives, but at the end, it was years of disease.
Yeah, well, we're trying to change that. So that's sort of our mission, but our vision really is that, you know, we're changing the global healthcare system from sick care to well care.
Right.
Right. And, you know, if you think about where we are right now, and I overheard this with Todd, it's that we are in sick care right now. It's like largely we find disease after it's presented with symptoms, right? So take bladder cancer. How is bladder cancer often found? Blood in the urine, right?
Yeah.
Hematuria, right? That's where we are today, okay? What we're doing in the Health Nucleus and what you just went through, I would call it sort of pre-symptomatic diagnosis.
Right.
It's sort of version two of healthcare, which means that, you know, we found your bladder cancer with imaging and genetics before you had symptoms, before there was blood in the urine, but you still had the bladder cancer in the first place.
Right.
Where we're going and the promise of artificial intelligence is what I call version 3.0 of healthcare, which is not only pre-symptomatic diagnosis, it's understanding your risk for a chronic age-related disease 10 or 20 years before disease onset, long before you'd ever get the disease, we tell you you're at elevated risk, and based on your own personalized risk factors, here's X, Y, and Z that you can do to lower your risk so you never get it in the first place.
I had some friends, David, who asked me when they knew I was coming here, oh, are you having the gene testing done? Yes, I am. And,
yeah.
Oh, aren't you afraid of what you might learn? And I yeah. thought to myself, I don't know, but I think I'm going to learn it anyway,
yeah.
sooner or later,
well,
right? So I wouldn't want to learn it sooner.
You're gonna the cat's out of the bag. You're gonna learn it anyway.
Yeah.
And so with data early, you can actually do something about it. You know, Angelina Jolie with BRCA.
Yeah.
You know, she chose what some would argue is pretty radical to do a full bilateral mastectomy because of her increased risk for breast cancer. I think probably given all that I know about it, it was a reasonable decision. But that's the that's the power of using genetics to make decision or decision support about your own health and wellness. And that's just one example.
So I came back from seeing you in January, and you had a great line. You may have forgotten it, but you were talking about this methodology for getting pre-symptomatic care.
Yeah.
And my wife is a family practice doc, and I came back and said, and David said, can you imagine some people, some physicians still look at their patients with flashlights?
Yeah.
And my wife said, I look at my patients with flashlights. I look in their ears, I look in their nose, whatever. Yeah. So today when she heard that I was going to see you, she said, oh, that's the flashlight
that's
guy.
That's the flashlight guy. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to start getting a bad name with my, fellow physicians. On that theme, artificial intelligence, there's long been among radiologists, which is my field, this fear that AI, artificial intelligence, was going to put us out of business, because, we'll use AI to read all the studies, the mammograms, the whole body CTs, all of that. And I actually think AI may put primary care doctors out of business before it puts radiologists out of business. Let me explain that. So, in a way, what we're trying to do at the Health Nucleus is allow you to be kind of the CEO of your own healthcare, right? So we're going to give you, a bunch of data. We're going to wrap it up for you in a layperson-friendly way, eventually with sort of apps and portals that allows you to make decisions about your health and wellness, okay? Now, if you have a tumor or an aneurysm, we're gonna send you an interventional radiologist or a surgeon. But largely, I believe that, health and wellness, your increased risk for chronic age-related disease, that's something that with data, we're gonna, you're gonna be able to make decisions about that. And yes, you'll occasionally consult with a physician, but largely that's gonna be in your own hands. I mean, in a way, many of us don't use stockbrokers anymore to sort of make investment decisions. I think for ordinary, run-of-the-mill precision health and wellness, we're going to be able, with artificial intelligence, to provide you with the data to make those decisions.
Yeah, see, I think I completely agree with you. I do think, having lived with a family physician for 35 years, that actually AI will be the greatest thing for those primary care practitioners because they will stop guessing about diagnosis, which is what most of them are really bad at.
Yeah.
And just how could just their information is incomplete and some of it's wrong and they're guessing.
Yeah.
But what it will allow the most gifted of them to do is to use their people skills to be able to talk about what are the risks of the diagnosis? What is the treatment that could be? And that's where they, in my view, they should be spending their time.
Exactly.
And so I want to be the CEO of my own healthcare.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't bother me if I had someone who was collaborating with me.
Yeah. A COO.
Yeah.
With you.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. I really think that's potentially really great for them.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, what we're trying to do, and what you went through, we collected 100 gigabytes of data on you. And in many respects, it's not too different from nearly all other aspects of your life, right? Your investment decisions, your car's got 1,000 sensors, your social media is informed by, thousands, millions of data points. Why should your own health and wellness be any different? And so, our sort of theory of the case is that, with deep data, genotypic, phenotypic data, imaging data, blood data, that we can allow you to make decision support about health and wellness in ways that we couldn't have 10-20 years ago.
So I know you're pressed for time. Let me ask you, so as you came on as the CEO of HLI, and here we are today, it's July 10th, 2019, what's your hope for destination for HLI?
Yeah. What I'd like to see HLI, and I think we're headed in this direction, is really a global longevity and performance brand that, consumers and customers, if they want to know how to optimize, perform better, live longer, extend their healthy human lifespan, we're the brand that's associated with that. And that may mean for some, they're going to come to the health nucleus here in La Jolla as we expand, probably next to Hong Kong and other major geographies. It may mean, you know, going to those sites. It may mean by partnerships with hospitals and concierge doctors and, mm-hmm. and primary care physicians, perhaps like your wife. You know, we're able to offer these analytics and diagnostics through sort of an extended ecosystem in partnership. So it's really that, you know, the concept of a global longevity and performance brand. And I, you know, it's not, for me, it's not just about, you know, disease or sickness or even longevity. It's really all on a spectrum. You know, many of our clients are actually in their 30s and 40s. They're probably not thinking about dementia, prostate, or breast cancer, but they're thinking about optimization, performance, and it's all really on the same spectrum. So the same tools that we give you to extend your healthy human lifespan, they're the same tools that are going to allow you to optimize, perform better at work, perform better in the gym, so forth.
David, I really love that description, and I look forward to continuing the conversation with
Great.
You.
Great. Pete, awesome.